We are now faced with the fact that tomorrow is today. We are confronted with the fierce urgency of now. In this unfolding conundrum of life and history, there is such a thing as being too late. This is no time for apathy or complacency. This is a time for vigorous and positive action. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. My name is Margaret Lazarus, and I am a superintendent of education at the Durham District School Board. I identify as a Black cisgender female working in predominantly white spaces as I have throughout my career. I want to focus our attention on the importance of having courageous conversations about disrupting and dismantling anti-Black racism in schools. But in order to have an understanding of anti-Blackness, we need to develop our own understanding of race as a social, political construction of knowledge. And this is important for us to do some learning in this area because it will help us understand the impact of anti-Blackness on our students in our school system. The belief that there is little to no racism in Canada becomes a considerable barrier to addressing it. We love to say that we live in a diverse society with an official policy of multiculturalism, but we need to come to terms with our history of genocide and oppression of Indigenous people. We need to come to terms with the fact that Canada was built on the enslavement and oppression of peoples of African descent. We have to better understand settler colonization in Canada to understand the role that anti-Blackness plays in education. Anti-Black racism is prejudice, attitudes, beliefs, stereotyping, or discrimination directed at people of African descent and is rooted in their unique history and experience of enslavement and colonization. Anti-Black racism is deeply embedded in Canadian institutions, policies, and practices to the point that it has become part of our system, part of our ways of being and doing. You can't change what you don't acknowledge. James Baldwin, American novelist and playwright, says it another way. Not everything that is faced can be changed, but nothing can be changed until it is faced. Sage advice for all of us. So let's do some facing up today with the numbers. In Canada, 206, the number of years that slavery was practiced in this country. Slavery officially ended in 1834. It's not so long ago, but anti-Black racism continues in many different ways. 1965, the last segregated school closed in Ontario. 1983, the last segregated school closed in Nova Scotia. 75.6 cents, that's how much a Black person earns for every dollar earned by a non-racialized person. 13%, the unemployment rate for Black people in Ontario, which is higher than for non-racialized people at 7.5%. 10%, that's the number or the percentage, pardon me, that Blacks make up in the federal prison population, but are only 3.5% of the general population, 3.5%. 41% of Black students are in CAS care, but make up just 8% of the youth population. These statistics are not myths. They're not alternative facts. They are ways in which anti-Black racism continues today in the broader community. So then to fully understand anti-Black racism, it is essential to explore how race has been positioned historically within this broader social context. Very briefly, the Atlantic slave trade began in the 1400s. It disrupted African societal structures. People from the continent was murdered, raped, maimed, and sold into slavery. Sugar and tobacco plantations in the Americas and the Caribbean increased the need to enslave Africans, leading to the forced migration of approximately 13 million Africans across the Atlantic and into slavery. Being sold into slavery established you right then and there as an inferior. You had no legal rights. You couldn't work. You couldn't go to school. You couldn't get married. You couldn't raise your own children. Race became a social construct and was created to give economic advantage to its creators and provide a rationale for enslaving human beings and forcing Black and Indigenous people into poverty, and by the corollary, ensuring that white people retain the wealth of the nation. Slavery also set in motion the idea that Blacks were dangerous, not human, and they needed to be controlled. Segregation continued the idea that Black people were dangerous and needed to be separated from white people. We need to understand the history to know why Black students in schools are considered dangerous. They're excluded, they're sent to the office, they're separated from other students. Most people tend to think of racism as blackface, people carrying tiki torches in the streets of Charlottesville or the KKK. But racism is much more than that. Racism is a systemic form of oppression and occurs when a racial group's prejudice is backed by legal authority and institutional control. Racism is about a relationship of unequal power. Anti-racist leaders is what we all need to be today. It is the practice of identifying, challenging, and changing the values, changing the structures, changing the behaviors that perpetuate systemic racism. Anti-racism cannot be passive. It requires action. The death of George Floyd a couple of years ago has been a catalyst for worldwide awakening with regards to anti-Black racism and has captured the psyche of the world. We know that schools are endowed with the power to punish and to privilege, to enact social control and surveillance. So the question is asked, what are some of the consequences of the historical context of anti-Black racism? How does anti-Black racism manifest itself in our schools today? Erasure. That's the invisibility of the Black identity within the curriculum. When you think about in English classes and the novels that our students are reading, very few novels have a Black person as the protagonist. We think about history. We're erased from history. It's as if we didn't exist in the historical context. And we also have a predominantly white demographic of educators that continue to impact our Black students negatively. Streaming. Our Ministry of Education is finally addressing streaming, which leads and has led to second generation segregation because of the ongoing inequities it perpetuates. It disproportionately funnels racialized and low-income students out of classes that could lead to higher education and does lasting harm to their prospects. We still have a long way to go in this area, but we've made a start, which is good. But de-streaming math, the math curriculum, is not enough. We need to go further. So we've got lots of work to do in this area. Black youth, especially our Black boys, are treated as a threat inside education settings. Their presence is unwelcomed and undesirable, and their movements are closely monitored and subject to correction. They also face heightened surveillance and disciplinary measures at massively disproportionate high rates compared to white peers. They're dissuaded from gathering groups and are treated as suspects instead of children, typecasting, demonizing. We think of when Black students tell me about boys, that when they're gathering and talking with their friends and teachers are always surveilling them because they're thinking that something nefarious is going on. Black youth are subjected to more extreme disciplinary measures than white students, 8 times more likely to face discipline than white. Black parents end up on the receiving end of trespassing orders. They've been reported to Children's Aid Society for offenses that have included challenging school officials on whether a child needs medication for attention deficit disorder. White students are granted more leniency when expressing racist hostility. I remember a case that I was dealing with in one of my schools where 2 boys, Black and white, grade 5, were on the bus going home from school, and an argument arose. The white boy called the Black boy the N-word. The Black boy responded with a punch, with his fist. And the next day, the incident was given to the principal, and the principal suspended the Black boy for 5 days, and the white boy just got a talking to for not using nice words on kids. Leniency when expressing racist hostility. Ramon St. Vincent, a TESB teacher, added to the list of all the ways that Black anti-Blackness manifests itself in school, anti-Black racism, more office referrals, the disproportionate special education referrals, excluded and gifted, lower expectations for our Black students, underrepresented in academic award recipients, overrepresented in athletic awards recipients. They're often seen as the aggressor in conflicts. They're assessed as having poor learning skills and work habits. They're overrepresented in behavior programs. They're assumed to have unsupportive parents. This is a legacy of slavery and anti-Blackness. I often hear people say, why are we focusing just on the Black students? Don't all students matter? Absolutely all students matter. But I'd like you to consider it from this perspective. Imagine three houses side by side on your street. The house in the middle is on fire. 911 is called. The fire trucks have been dispatched. Would you be saying to yourself on the street, I wonder which house the firefighters are going to go to? Oh, but you know what? It doesn't matter because all houses matter. But to the firefighters, if you ask them, they have a specific task and will direct all of their attention with a laser focus on the house in the middle, because by saving the house in the middle, all three houses will be saved. So if we know and see that a house is burning down, I gave you the statistics at the onset of this discussion. If we know that a house is burning down and we don't say or do anything, are we not morally responsible? That's a question for self-reflection. I'd like to leave you with just some tips and strategies for addressing anti-Black racism in our schools. We know it exists. Be willing to have these courageous conversations about historical implications of anti-Blackness. Education is a human right, and we must continue to address the systemic and institutional barriers that prevent Black youth from accessing and claiming their right to an education. It's important that we keep data. We have to constantly review and accept the data as a critical step to allow for tangible changes to be made. This is the next one's most difficult. We've got to be prepared to call out racism when it does occur. An example, one of the schools I'm supporting, a teacher had those two boys having a conflict in the classroom, one Black, one white, but grade seven, grade eight. And the teacher was frustrated and she decided she'd send one to the office and keep one in the classroom. Well, of course, I don't have to tell you who was sent to the office and who was not. But when the principal received the Black boy in the office, he understood the situation. He was not happy. And this is a white principal. And he went to the teacher and called it out and said, why? You either keep them both or send them both. And it's important that we have this understanding of the context so that we can call it out when it happens. Anti-Blackness must be targeted with anti-racist policies and practices to improve outcomes for Black students. And that's part of our job as superintendents, is to create those policies that are going to ensure equitable outcomes for all of our students. And another tip is to celebrate and amplify the voices of the Black community through your hiring processes, through the people that we invite into our schools to talk to our children. It's always validating when our kids see people that look just like them. And then I would advise educators to know your students and to build a curriculum on their identity. They need to see themselves represented in constructive ways. Recognizing through all of what I've said, it's about relationships. Know your people, know who they are, know what their needs are, know what their concerns are. Validate and affirm their identity, because at the end of the day, what we need is success for all students, because education is a human right. Dr. King, Martin Luther King Jr. said, our lives begin to end the day we become silent about the things that matter. And we're at a point where it matters how we lead. And today is the day when dismantling anti-Black racism matters. And we need each of us to take stock of why and how it should matter to us, why it should matter to you in your context, in your school, in your board. It matters how we address issues of race in society. It matters how we resolve issues of race in our schools. It matters how we speak about issues of race to our children, to our students. It matters how I, Margaret Lazarus, internalize my responsibility to bring about change. It matters. It is important that we disrupt and dismantle anti-Black racism. But to do that, we've got to understand the context that created anti-Blackness. And so I leave you with that thought, that it matters. And that self-reflection, what am I doing to be an anti-racist? Thank you for listening and enjoy the rest of your day.